On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about legal challenges brought by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. That's a conservative law and policy organization. We're looking closely at several suits, in particular, Governor Evers' partial veto powers that create new laws by altering language. We'll also look at how standardized test scores are released for public and voucher schools. And we start with how voter rolls are purged and updated and when that happens. Are you familiar with the suit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission? Do you support it? What questions do you have about how the voter rolls are maintained? We're at 800-642-1234. Rick Essenberg is president and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Rick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
So last week, your firm filed a suit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission. What does the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty consider unlawful about how the Elections Commission goes about maintaining these voter rolls?
All right. Well, you know, we have a problem in the United States in that there are a lot of inaccurate or outdated registrations on our voter rolls, not just in Wisconsin, but in every state. It makes it harder to run elections. It's harder to anticipate what the turnout will be. And it does provide at least an opportunity for fraud, because there are a lot of people on the rolls that are not going to be voting at the location at which they're registered. And so because of that, both federal and state law have attempted to address the obligation to keep those rolls as accurate as they possibly can be. And state law says that when the Wisconsin Election Commission receives reliable information that a person may have moved, that it's supposed to send a postcard telling them, look, we think you no longer live at the address that you're registered. And if you still do, you need to return this postcard within 30 days in order to maintain your registration at that address. If the person fails to return the postcard, then their registration at that address is deactivated. Now, in Wisconsin, that doesn't mean that they won't be able to vote at that address, because if they go to the polls on Election Day and they find that their registration has been deactivated, we have same-day voter registration in Wisconsin, in which you can register with a wide variety of information that indicates your address. And in almost all cases, that voter will be able to then re-register and cast their ballot. So the Wisconsin Election Commission nevertheless has determined that it's not going to follow state law in this regard. It's not going to remove voters who have not returned that postcard until they haven't voted in one or more election cycles. Now, that is the law, the federal requirement, or at least it's close to the federal requirement, for states that don't have same-day registration. But because we do have same-day registration in Wisconsin, we are exempted from that federal requirement, because we've got a backstop that other states don't have.
Well, I want to pause. I want to pause right there, going back to voter fraud. Do you think Wisconsin is more vulnerable to voter fraud with the process that is in place right now?
So I have always thought that that same-day registration does present an opportunity for voter fraud. I remember being at a polling place, I think during the 2004 election, and there were eight lawyers at that polling place, and people could have been cheating left and right, and the lawyers would not have been able to do anything about it, because same-day registration in Wisconsin allows you to register and cast a ballot using easily fabricated information. In that sense, I think that's the real value of Wisconsin's photo ID requirement, because it at least requires you to produce a government ID that has to, you know, at least to identify who you are. Now, people will say, well, but nobody engages in voter fraud, right? Nobody would cheat in an election. I find that assertion to be implausible. Human beings, most human beings will not cheat, but some human beings will cheat on almost anything. They cheat on their taxes, they cheat on their spouses, they engage in identity theft, identity fraud, and because of that, we usually want to keep in place reasonable guardrails in order to assure that fraud doesn't exist. And we can all agree that the franchise is important. We can all agree that the integrity of our elections are important. And so it seems to me that in order to ensure that is so, that our elections, that the franchise is respected, that people's votes are not diluted by fraudulent votes, and to ensure that people have public confidence in the integrity of our elections, which are often very, very close, taking reasonable steps to safeguard against fraud seems to be a reasonable way to go. And Wisconsin has done that through the process that I've just described, at least with respect to maintaining the accuracy of the voter rolls. It's very disappointing that the Election Commission will not even take this modest step to ensure the integrity of our elections.
Let's pause right there with Rick Essenberg. He's an attorney with the group Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. You can join in. What questions do you have about how voter rolls are maintained here in Wisconsin? Do you think voter rolls should be purged more or less frequently? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So in 2017, the Wisconsin Elections Commission sent mailings to 342,000 potentially relocated voters. In this case, the commission did remove voters who didn't respond to the mailer within 30 days. 46,000 of those voters had to be reactivated at the same address. Does this signify that the 30-day window may be too short and cause unnecessary deactivations, Rick Essenberg?
Well, it was about, looking at, those numbers, there's about a 93%. You could read them to have about a 93% accuracy rate. There is no anti-fraud mechanism which is going to be perfect. Any of us who have a credit card, have sort of experienced a situation where our credit card company will hold up a charge because they're concerned about potential fraud. And you're always going to be able to hypothesize a situation in which any type of ballot security measure could go awry. But the important thing here is that Wisconsin has a backstop. You can, if you are removed from the polls, you don't know it, you ignore the postcard, you don't send it back, you don't check your mail, I don't know, whatever happens.
And I've gotten one of those postcards. It can certainly get lost in the shuffle of other mail around it.
Could that's possible. That could happen. Again, nothing is going to work perfectly, but you will still be able to vote, because when you go to the polling place on election day and you find out that your registration is deactivated, you will be able to re-register to vote right there at that moment and cast your ballot. That's different than a lot of other states, and it may be appropriate in those other states to be more circumspect about and slower in cleaning up the voter rolls. But we don't need to do that in Wisconsin because we have that backstop. That's why we are not subject to the National Voter Registration Act, and that's why state law provides what it does. And, we can argue about the policy of this all we want. We can argue about whether this is a good idea or a bad idea, but it is the law. And if you don't like the law, the solution for that is not to have the Wisconsin Election Commission ignore it.
Well, I got to pause right there with Rick Essenberg, and you can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're examining recent legal challenges brought by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. The law firm has sued in regards to voter rolls, And are you familiar with the suit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission? Do you support it? Join in 800-642-1234. Attorney Rick Essenberg stays with us. He's president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. So, you know, the Wisconsin Elections Commission has said that they have the authority to wait longer than 30 days because another state law allows them to create rules about how to maintain the voter rolls. So do we have conflicting state laws on the books?
No, I don't think that the authorization of the Election Commission to promulgate rules means that it can alter the law that the legislature has passed. Whenever an agency creates rules, fidelity to the statutory law is always going to be a test of that rule. And if you think about it for a minute, that is moored in our separation of powers, right? That we learned in civics, or we learned it on Schoolhouse Rock, however we learned it. We know that the legislature makes the law, and the executive, and the Election Commission is part of the executive, they carry the law out. And they do not have the power to legislate. They do not have the power to change state law. And the fact that they assert that they do is extremely disturbing.
Well, let's take a call now. Ron joining us from Lancaster. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Without getting too into detail, I just want to say I've got some pretty intimate knowledge of how the post office works. And there's these things called certified letters. You've got 15 days. You need a signature. It's very official. You get two notifications from the post office, and many people, even though their house, their car, their insurance is on the line, don't make it in 15 days. To think that somebody is going to take a postcard that could be mistaken for junk mail and reply in 30 is just not realistic, besides the fact that I don't see the game for removing people just to put them back on the voter rolls when they show up because it was in error. Seems like effort and futility.
Ron, thanks for the call. Rick, in effort and futility, what do you see there?
Well, first of all, I think Ron is incorrect in suggesting that people are removed from the rolls only to be added on. The fact of the matter is the overwhelming majority of people who do not return these postcards do not show up to vote at the registration because the information is accurate. They have moved and they should be removed from the rolls. Now, so that small percentage that do show up, I agree. It's possible that somebody can overlook a postcard. That could happen. But they have the ability to re-register at the polls. And in fact, that's what's happened in the past. And so, under federal law, like if we were subject to if we didn't have same day voting registration, then under federal law, we would have to wait and see whether these people voted in some subsequent federal elections, at least with respect to an election where a federal candidate is on the ballot. But we don't need to do that here in Wisconsin because we have this backstop. We have a very generous and liberal, if you will, same-day registration system, which will allow somebody to re-register and cast a vote.
Let's go to Gary now in Iron River. Good morning, Gary.
Yeah, good morning, Kate and Mr. Essenberg. It seems to me that if Mr. Essenberg is stating the facts correctly, it's a cut and dried situation. We have laws. Laws need to be enforced. If they're not enforced, then there's something going haywire. If there's a considered belief that the law is wrong, the law should be changed. But yes, I support the lawsuit, and not enforcing laws is one of these things that leads to contempt of the laws, and that doesn't get us anywhere. It gets us to anarchy.
Well, Rick, do you see a pretty clear path forward for this suit? Do you think that you'll win?
Yeah, I think we have a very, very strong case, and I think the caller makes an important point. We live in a world right now where both sides, people on the left and people on the right, sort of have the attitude that when we're in power, we should use it any way that we possibly can. And so when Barack Obama was president, the Democrats looked the other way when he exceeded his executive authority and tried to remake the law or ignore the law in various ways. And Democrats did that because they liked what President Obama was doing. Now we flash forward and Donald Trump is president of the United States. And unfortunately, too many Republicans are doing the same thing. They're looking away when, you know, President Trump acts in ways which exceed his executive authority. My suggestion is that we all make sure that we agree on what the rules are. And the rules in this country is the legislature makes the law and the executive administers the law. The law here, whether we like it or not, and I think the law is quite defensible, provides for the removal of these voters with the opportunity to re-register. Well, we ought to follow that law.
We're talking with Rick Essenberg, an attorney with the group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. You can join in as we move on to partial vetoes. What do you think about the level of transparency in Wisconsin government? Should public officials have to oblige all public records requests? Join in 800-642-1234. So as we move on here, Rick, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is taking up your case that challenges Governor Evers' use of the partial veto. Why does this warrant judicial review? This law has been on the books since 1930.
Well, the law has been misinterpreted by the court since 1930. What the Constitution says is that the governor may approve or disapprove an appropriation item in whole or in part. And what happened is that governors, and it's not just Tony Evers, prior Democratic governors have done it, Jim Doyle, prior Republican governors have done it, Tommy Thompson, they've all done it. And what they've done is they've interpreted that language to mean that they not only have the power to approve or disapprove an appropriation item, but in various ways they can strike words and they can rewrite the law. The Constitution does not provide for that. The words of the Constitution do not say that. If you look at the history of the constitutional provision, that is not what was intended. And the courts have allowed our state governors, both Democrats and Republicans, over the years to distort the Constitution. And at various points, the voters have tried to straighten things out. We amended the Constitution to eliminate the old Vanna White veto. That's when Tommy Thompson would strike out letters and make new words. And we amended the Constitution to eliminate the Vanna White, not the Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where Governor Doyle would, you know, go for pages and pages and strike out and take a word here and a number there, and he'd build a new law. And that's, again, this is inconsistent with the separation of powers that I talked about earlier, where the legislature makes the law and the executive administers it. And the governor has the power to say, no, we're not going to spend this item. He has the power to say, we spend less on this item than you appropriated. But he should not have, and the Constitution does not give him, by its language or history, the authority to take an appropriation for school buses, including those that operate on alternative fuel, and turn it into an appropriation for electrical vehicle charging stations, which is what Governor Evers did.
Well, what about a veto override in this situation?
Well, a veto override is a tough thing, right? I mean, you got to get 2/3 of the vote, and normally, neither party has enough seats in the legislature to do that. The point is that a veto override should not be necessary here, because the veto that is described in the Constitution, which talks about approval or disapproval of an appropriation item, does not mean that you get to rewrite the law. And because you don't have the power to rewrite the law, there should be no need for a veto override. You've exceeded your power. We don't get to the question of a veto override. So we've asked the court to reexamine the way in which the courts have interpreted this constitutional language, and it has agreed to do so, and we'll see what the court does.
Yeah, I mean, it's been before the high court before, and I'm wondering if this a problem with appropriations bills? If your governor approves 90% of a state budget, but there's 10% they don't agree with, why can't they strike the 10% and move the budget forward?
Well, again, it depends upon what you mean by striking. If the striking is that the governor doesn't want to spend $1 million for Project A and simply eliminates that appropriation item, the governor clearly has the authority to do that, and we wouldn't challenge that. But if the governor takes the $1 million that is appropriated for purpose A and changes it into an appropriation for purpose B, that goes beyond approval or disapproval. That's changing. That's different. And the Constitution does not, if you read the language of the Constitution, it does not give him the authority. The courts have misinterpreted that language over the years. And given the creativity of the staff who have worked for governors over the years, I think it's time to get the interpretation right rather than rely on the voters to have to keep coming back and amending the Constitution saying, no, we didn't mean you could do that. We didn't mean you could do that. You know, I think we need to return to the original understanding and the clear language of the constitutional text.
Rick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Attorney Rick Essenberg is president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Coming up, it's news, and the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling on the line. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.